expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Good morning, Fairbanks. You're listening to KFAR Radio. We are at 660 on the AM dial, 97.5 on the FM dial, and we live stream at kfarradio.com. This is Problem Corner. I'm your host, David Pruse. If you want to call into today's show, that's a really big shoe. We're at 907-458-TALK, 907-458-8255. And it's the second Wednesday of the month, which means...
we have Nick Nugent with a history spot, but today... we are very fortunate because we have a guest, Miss Libby Dalton, who's going to talk about her father, Jack Dalton, the Dalton Highway, and some of the early years on North Slope exploration.
She was supposed to be on here last month, but she was in Hawaii. So there was a penalty.
There was.
And she didn't bring the penalty. But we will get through that. No, Libby, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, thank you. And one correction. Father was James Dalton. Jack Dalton was grandfather.
I'm sorry, they did so many things alike. It's kind of easy to...
understood.
So we are here to discuss your father, the early years. There's a highway named after him, a few other things. Mm-hmm. But you know the thing I like about best about your father?
What was that?
You.
Oh,
really, you. You and your mom. I think you are the best thing, no matter what.
Well, thank you. Okay, so I got a ton of notes here.
You know, it's a lot of fun seeing someone studying about their father.
Actually, our family, I learn most of the things about my family through articles, history books, just good old Alaska history, because he died rather young and at the age of 64, and I was only 20 years old, so I didn't get to know him. Or spend much time with him as an adult.
You know, it's interesting. You come across trails of your father. I'll come across trails of my father that I never knew.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
It's just interesting. You sort of shake your head and say, wow, Dad. Wow, Mom.
Yeah. Yeah. I find out all kinds of cool things. So let me start by talking about my earliest memory of my father, which I was about 3 years old. And I was being pushed around in the wheelbarrow on our property off Yankovich Road. I had a great childhood. My parents were married in 1950 in Point Barrow. And my mom got to live up there because she was married to the superintendent. And lived up there for about 5 years. But they always planned to move back to Fairbanks. My dad kind of got his start in Fairbanks because he graduated from the University of Alaska in 1937, and he mined all around Fairbanks, and I'll go through a list of that those areas later. But anyway, my parents had their eyes on some property that belonged to Charles Bunnell, and he owned a ton of it around the university, north, south, west of the university and north of the university. I mean, a ton of it. And so my mom said, well, you know, let's go check it out. And they also checked out Chena Ridge, which they couldn't access because it was too tough to get up there. Not a good road. Goldstream, same. No access. Couldn't get out there. But there was farming off Farmer's Loop. And Belaine Road is named after a farmer. And Yankovich Road is named after a farmer. So there was a good road there. And it's the next hill over from the university. So she said, go talk to Dr. Bunnell and ask him, you know, if he'd sell any property. And my dad, the president of the university? No, not my cup of tea, Mike. So she said, well, I'll do it. And so she went up and had a chat with him. He said, Mike, I think so much of your husband. pick out any parcel you want up there. Go stake it out and come back and talk to me. And so they did. And he picked 30 acres up the section line. There wasn't a road there yet. And then another 8 acres on top of the hill, which he thought might come in useful later. And they purchased it. And that's how...
the family homestead started.
That's how it started. And when he was in town, and most of his work was on the North Slope or out of town at different projects. When he was in town, there was a lot of work to be done around the house. Clearing land, planting grass, building a home. And we were just little kids, my brother and I. And that's my earliest memory, getting pushed around in the wheelbarrow, the dog chasing us, having a good old time.
Libby, somehow the thought of your mother walking up and telling the president of the university she needed a building lot, that doesn't surprise me a bit with your mom.
Yeah, no. Come to think of it, no, it doesn't. She's quite comfortable.
I look at it a different way. Your dad sent in the right negotiator.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Anyway, it's wonderful property. It's getting a little bit crowded out there right now, but I still don't have any neighbors that I can see in the summer. And so to my dad, he was born January 30th, 1913 in Seattle. The family was living in Cordova, but there were no medical facilities. There was no doctor, nurse. And so if you had resources, the women went out to Seattle to have the babies. And so she did, and he was born in Seattle, and 2 weeks later, he was back in Cordova. I heard him on a tape of his history, and he said he remembers playing on the railroad. The railroad was a big deal because the terminus was going to be of the, what was the name, White Pass in Yukon?
Copper River Northwestern.
Copper River Northwestern from the Kennecott Mines was going to end up in Cordova. So he remembers ringing the bell and playing around the docks and stuff, and his father had a nice house on the pier, and it still stands. It's called Three Point Tier, and it's surrounded by a cannery, but it's still standing. And that house turned out to be good leverage for Jack Dalton, because when the railroad was being constructed, they wanted to take it because that's exactly where they were going to put the port. And he wasn't interested in selling it, so they had a long court battle, and he came out on top.
So, again, the trailblazer had the perfect eye for locations.
Yeah, yes. Very strategic planning that he ended up in Cordova doing a little mining, doing a little timber work, and building right there on the pier where somewhere that railroad was going to end. So, anyway, they lived in Cordova until 1919, and he left Alaska, Jack and his wife Anna. Sister Josephine was born in 1916, so they had two kids, and they headed to Seattle. Right away, they put him in parochial school, St. Joseph's Parochial School for first grade, and then they moved over to Yakima. And I'm not familiar with location logistics. Is Yakima Eastern Washington?
It is.
Okay. Yeah. Well, he had his eye on growing apples and stuff. This was before they made good wine, I guess. But second grade, he went to St. Paul's Parochial School in Yakima, and they lived there for several years. And he just grew up in the parochial school system in Yakima, Washington. His mother died at an early age. I think he was a teenager. And after that, he was going to high school in Yakima. It was before he was in high school. It's probably around the age of 12. Unfortunately, his mother passed away. And so he was going to high school in Yakima, and then Jack decided, I'm sending him to college preparatory school. How do you say that?
Preparatory
school. So I went to a real fancy one called Bellarmine College Preparatory in Santa Clara, and it's still in existence today.
A friend of mine went to Bellarmine. That's a very popular Catholic school.
Yes. So that was interesting, you know, a fact that my dad was raised Catholic. Well, I don't know how Catholic, how much Catholic he was raised. My mom went all parochial school.
I was raised Catholic, too. There's only one answer, too much. You're too much Catholic.
That's what happened to my mom. She was raised all parochial school. Yeah. Until her senior year in high school, she told her parents, I'm done. I'm going to Tucson High, or I'll leave. She was done with it. So the parents didn't really educate us. We were baptized Catholics, but we didn't have any formal religious education.
Fairbanks, with that, we're going to take a moment here. We're going to have some commercial break. We'll be back after these messages, and we'll reflect on our religious backgrounds.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Living in Alaska is a dream come true. With plenty of stuff to do all summer long, the downside? It's loud. Boating, dirt bikes, ATVs, and sports shooting all can take a toll on your hearing. That's where Fairbanks Hearing and Balance comes in. They have a full selection of hearing protection for your lifestyle. From non-custom electronic plugs to custom molded waterproof plugs, all the way up to the full custom molded electronic masterpieces. To find out more, get a test with Dr. Jackson at the Fairbanks Hearing and Balance Center today, or find out more at fairbankshearing.com.
Finally, the days are getting longer and getting warmer, so make sure to get those tires changed out soon. Make an appointment now at Pearson Auto to get her done. While you're at it, have them get your rig ready for those spring road trips. And don't forget, they're always on sale. Synthetic oil changes, that'll save you some much-needed gas money. All at Pearson Auto off the Ridge Highway towards North Pole and across from Pikes on Airport Way. Online at PearsonAutoAK.com. That's Pearson Auto, your dealership alternative.
When you love being outside in Alaska, wintertime is just another trail to more sporting opportunities. Gear up with Frontier Outfitters. No matter what it is, small game hunting, predator calling, ice fishing, and more, you'll find what you're looking for. Guns, ammunition, optics, GPS, traps, snares, and the right clothes. Winter camping necessities as well, and a variety of tents and sleeping bags. Prepare for success. Visit Frontier Outfitters. It's the best start to your next outdoor adventure for your Alaskan lifestyle. Frontier Outfitters. Outfitters. Optimize your eyes with Mountain View Eye Center, Interior Alaska's choice for state-of-the-art eye care. Find relief with the most advanced dry eye center in the interior. See clearly and be free of your reading glasses and contacts for good. Optimize your eyes with Mountain View Eye Center. Surgeons Dr. Laura Kearsley and Dr. Jason Crosscree specialize in premium cataract surgery, LASIK laser vision correction, and treatment of eye disease. All insurance accepted. Schedule your consultation. Visit mountainvieweyes.com.
KFAR weather.
Overcast skies today with a slight chance for snow changing to rain showers. High temperatures reach up to 41. Winds out of the south around 5 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected again tonight. Slight chance for rain showers mixing with, then changing to snow. Lows dip down to about 22. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Laura Lockwood.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I have Nick Nugent and Libby Dalton-Slane in the studio here with me, and we're going to go hunt down that weather person who said something about the four-letter S word, and we're going to hurt them. But first, a phone call. Good morning. You're on KFAR Radio, and your name is?
Mel.
Mel, what you up to?
I really hate to intrude on your guest, but I would just like to correct that. There is no such word as preparatory. It's preparatory.
And thank you.
I would like to advise your listeners in general, never use David Prue's as a source of language, grammar, or spelling.
Well, I appreciate that.
he is not the source that you should rely on for correction in the English language. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate your phone calls as always.
Could have been worse. We could have been batting around the word suppository.
Preparatory.
That's a big word. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay, so after prep school, he goes to the University of Washington at Pullman. For 3.5 years. I'm not sure if Jack paid for this or if he scooted up to Alaska and worked in the gold mines to pay for college. But in his later college years, he did work in Fairbanks, around Fairbanks, to pay for college. I always assumed he graduated from the University of Alaska in 1937, and I just assumed he went to all 4 years there, but he did not. And so this is a good memory event for me. After 3.5 years, he transferred to the University of Alaska and completed his final and senior year in 1936-37, graduating with a degree in mining engineering. I did find him on a 1940 census as working. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself. He did say that in 1935, now my father didn't tell me this because he passed away at just the age of 64, so I didn't know him extensively as an adult, but he did do a tape recording of his life. And he did say in 1935, when he was 22 years old, he worked all summer mining at Goldstream Creek. He only went to town one time, that's Fairbanks. He made 60 cents an hour and worked 10 hours 7 days a week and earned $500 to pay for his college.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I bet he appreciated every cent he had.
Yeah. Yes.
They don't make them like they used to.
Absolutely
they just don't.
Not.
Okay, here's his work background after he graduated from the University of Alaska.
What was his degree in at the university?
Mining engineering.
Okay.
Yep. After graduation, he worked for the FE Company and for various other gold mining interests. He spent those years primarily in Fairbanks, working for the FE Company and others on Fairbanks Creek, Clary Mine, American Creek near Tofty and Manly, Chena Hot Springs, and the Circle District. I found a 1940 census that showed him as a gold miner working on Esther Creek outside Fairbanks. So he always loved mining, and he would have loved to gone back to that probably after his distinguished career as an engineer up north. But one thing we did in the summers when he was in town was drive around to these old mining camps. And I remember as a kid, me and him and the neighbor, Susie Mendenhall, would throw our bikes in the back of his truck and we'd go to Live and Good, and we'd go to Circle, and we'd go all over Esther Dome. He knew where lots of holes were in Esther Dome. And he always told me, there's millions of dollars in this mountain or dome or hill, but it's just too expensive to get out. Yep.
Well, it's now that it's at $5,000 an ounce.
Yeah.
things change.
Mel, they're coming up to your area.
So the family, we didn't, growing up, you know, I'll say again, I had a great childhood. We didn't go on vacations to California and Hawaii and here and there. We got in the car and went to Valdez, or he loved to go to Manly because of the hot springs and mainly, I think, the tomatoes grown by the Dart family. So we went up and down the Richardson Highway. There was no Parks Highway. A lot. And
yeah.
To this day, I think that's the most beautiful drive in the whole state. And I might be a little biased. But
well, it changes so in so many good ways. You know, you have this area of flat, then you hit the straight stretches of Delta, then you hit the Black Mountains, and then you go up into Rainbow Ridge, and then you hit the open valleys near Copper Center, and then you start going up the mountains towards Valdez, and there's this very distinct areas that offer anything you want.
Yeah, go through two mountain ranges, basically, and nowadays you see the pipeline, you know?
Yeah.
And that's comforting to me. Because it was such a major change to our state for the good. And to know that private enterprise could do that project in how many years?
Three?
Yep.
Yeah.
3 years. It was an amazing engineering feat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
75, 76, 77.
Yep. I worked on the pipeline each of those years. Yep. Okay, well, let's see where my dad ends up getting drafted. 1942, saw his draft card.
Everyone got drafted in 42. Either got drafted or you joined.
So he signed up for the Navy Seabees because he was an engineer, and they were the building arm of the military, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he was hoping to get sent up north because the Seabees had already established their search for oil and gas petroleum reserves on the North Slope in NPR-4. But he didn't get sent up north. He got sent to Dutch Harbor, San Francisco, and Pearl Harbor, the territory of Hawaii. And that's where he did his 3 years. He got out in, let's see, 46. And the first thing he did was run down to Arctic Contractors and apply for a job as an engineer. And Arctic Contractors was a consortium formed as the executive contractor to the Office of Petroleum and Oil Shale Reserves, U.S. government. They were phasing out the Seabees and going with Arctic Contractors. Seabees had other assignments, I'm sure, but Arctic Contractors was the heart of his career. And he excelled in it, and he did some incredible things in it. And so I can tell you, it was Arctic Contractors was composed of Green Construction, Little Construction, and a couple other large construction companies around Alaska. So they had experience.
Mm-hmm.
And
what did he do for them?
Well, what did he do for Arctic Contractors? He started out as a project engineer. And he worked his way up to general superintendent in 1952. His duties were mainly logistics and construction related to activity in drilling oil and gas wells, seismic surveys for oil and gas in the Arctic, winter freighting, construction of rig foundations and life support systems for drilling rigs and camps. It kept him busy. They had to navigate the work season.
Well, and also you have to take into account the hostile environment that they sent people up to.
Absolutely.
And how do you get them there?
Absolutely. And that was his job.
Yeah. Cat trains, boat lifts.
Yep.
You know.
Building airports.
Constructing a
Arctic Research Naval Lab.
Yeah.
Yep. That was his home.
And they were in the western North Slope, which is, even if you look at it today, is much sparser than villages and so forth than the eastern areas. So they were quite by themselves.
Yep. Anyway, his resume says that as general superintendent, this embraced the overall logistics planning connected with the U.S. Naval Petroleum Exploration Program, preparation and execution of plans for construction, operation and maintenance of camps, roads, runways, utility systems, surface and airlift freighting programs, design and construction of drilling rigs and seismic plants. In conformity with the discipline imposed by seasonal Arctic conditions. Now that's his writing on his resume. So he got to know a lot of pilots, and he talked about in that interview flying around with Ween, one of the Weens. Sig?
There was Sig and Noel.
Wasn't Noel.
It was Sigmund then.
Yeah, he was flying around a lot. And I remember those, my mom telling me those flights up to Barrow were cold, no heat, not comfortable seating. What were they, DC-6s?
Threes and sixes, I believe, yes. Yeah. So, I think it's interesting in his resume, he just kind of threw in winter as a side thought there at the end of the statement.
Oh, yeah.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. We got some bumper music for you. Then we have some Fox News, state news, commercials, weather. And while we're off the air, I'm going to be asking Libby how she was able to accessorize to the color of my purple padded room with her clothing. We will be back. We'll be right back.
Your Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
I'm John Saucier. The White House confirming Vice President J.D. Vance will travel to Pakistan this weekend for in-person talks on ending the war with Iran. This after a ceasefire was agreed to. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt says the original plan was not acceptable.
The Iranians originally put forward a 10-point plan that was fundamentally unserious, unacceptable, and completely discarded. It was literally thrown in the garbage by President Trump and his negotiating team.
Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says Iran now has leverage over the Strait of Hormuz and doesn't believe the ceasefire will make much difference.
The Strait is only partially open for 2 weeks, and it's on a conditional basis. That leverage is not gone. Trump handed to the Iranians leverage over the Strait of Hormuz.
Schumer says the Senate will vote next week on a war powers resolution to limit the president's ability to attack Iran. America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
The Federal Transit Administration on Monday opened a long-awaited application window for a grant that Alaska relies on to fund its ferry operations. The grant application posted a year later than expected. The Anchorage Daily News reports the program, created under the administration of former President Joe Biden, has been used by Governor Mike Dunleavy and the Alaska legislature to supplant a growing portion of ferry operations spending with federal awards. In the current fiscal year, lawmakers were counting on the federal program to cover roughly 45% of ferry operations spending. But after President Donald Trump entered office last year, the program, along with dozens of other federal funding streams, was frozen. Awards were meant to be issued annually through the program's five-year duration, but remained frozen throughout 2025. Alaska lawmakers, at the request of the Dunleavy administration, still baked a nearly $78 million federal grant into the current year's budget for ferries. Alaska collected $37.2 million from ferry ticket sales in the 2025
streaming
fiscal
live
year.
At KFAR660.com.
Step into a room where hope is shared. Attend Find Out Free's spring fundraiser, supporting women and men along their parenting journeys. Be inspired with what's new. Find Out Free matters now more than ever, providing free parenting classes, diapers, and more. Not making headlines, making a difference. Register online at findoutfree.com. Find Out Free's spring fundraiser. 8 Star Event Center, 30th Avenue, Thursday, April 23rd, 6 to 8 p.m. FYNDOUTFree.com.
KFAR Radio is proud to bring you 50-50 Friday. Every Friday at 9 a.m., log on to our website for a half-price offer from a local business. Great deals on restaurants, stores, shops, services, sporting events, and more. It's 50-50 Friday. This week's offer?
It's Rat Pack. Not only hundreds of varieties of cigars and accessories, but an impressive humidor and tasting lounge as well. And of course, their very cool smoke-free cocktail lounge with top shelf favorites, cocktails, and high-end pours. That's Rat Pack. And right now, you can get a $50 gift certificate good for cigars and cocktails for just $25. All at Rat Pack. Open noon till 10 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday off Old Airport Way near Fred Meyer West. Rat Pack, this week's 50-50 Friday offer.
So log on to KFARradio.com this Friday morning starting at 9 a.m. for this awesome half-price offer. But hurry, as this deal will go fast. It's 50-50 Friday from KFAR.
A dependable heating system is essential for rural communities. No matter the season, no matter where you live, the Woodway has a Toyotomi to keep you warm. Toyotomi heaters are the most economical heating solution, lightweight and easy to transport. So whether your home is in town or out in the bush, you'll enjoy its ease and comfort. Toyotomi heaters come with an installation kit and Wi-Fi capabilities, so you can make sure your house doesn't freeze when you're out of state. Toyotomi, the Alaskan way, the right way, the wood way.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I have Nick Nugent and Libby Dalton-Slane in the studio here with me. And she told me that she wore the purple because she could wear the purple. Simple as that. That was some purple attitude.
Okay, so continuing on, I would say that his time with Arctic Contractors was the heart of his career. It's where he learned what resources the petroleum reserve contained and possessed, and what they had to do, the things they had to do to get to him, the cat trains, the air flights, the scheduling the barges at the exact time when the ice, winter ice was gone to allow freight into Point Barrow. That was the heart of his early work history. But it also gave him a vision, a very important vision that never left him, about the possibilities of oil and gas and petroleum products on the North Slope. So Dewline was up next on his schedule. Let's see.
Libby, did he ever mention the numbers of people that he had working with him?
At one time, 600 people.
Pretty. I mean, that's a small army by itself.
Yep. 600 people under him at the helm of when he was superintendent at Arctic Contractors. And so Arctic Contractors was basically 1946 to... I'm getting my years mixed up here.
About 52?
1953.
53.
And then came along the Dewline, if listeners haven't heard of the Dewline, it was
Defense Early Warning.
Yep. Started in 1953. Well, the construction was 1954 to 1957, but the story goes relations with Russia and the U.S. were deteriorating quickly, and the U.S. Department of Defense wanted to develop a long-range communication system for electronic and radar detection. Puget Sound and Drake was the construction contractor selected who built the Alaska section of the Dewline. The Dewline crossed the coast of Alaska, Canada, and Greenland. They sought out my father to lead the construction, and he was a superintendent on that project. They built 16 stations along the Arctic coast from Cape Lisburn to the demarcation point. It was completed under budget. By millions and millions of dollars in 57.
Now, what did you say about the construction? It was built what? Under budget.
Yes. Under budget. I wonder why.
Yeah.
Because Jim Dalton had the experience, and he also had the hands, because Arctic Contractors went over to Barrow Village.
Mm-hmm.
And scoped out some Inupiats, Eskimos, they were called then,
mm-hmm.
not their appropriate heritage of Inupiat, but they were eager, willing, and great workers. And one of his best friends that he made up there was a fellow named Ned Nusinginya, who served as a translator for people that had trouble speaking and understanding English. And he was his expediter for decades. And they became very, very good friends. So under the Dewline construction, there were 1,500 employees. 1,500 employees off and on. That seems like an awful high number to complete 16 tracking stations. I've got a picture of one at my house, and it's not a very big, complex radar. It's rather a small tower, but they would have had to have camps for people to live and work and communicate with and stuff. So,
and just moving of materials would have kept an awful lot of people going.
Yep. So let's see. Another big event in his career was about 1954. He went to work for the Alaska Development Board. Remember, we weren't a state yet. But we were going to be a state, and everybody was really counting and hoping on that. And one study he did was the potential of Gubik gas. Gubik was a petroleum structure east of Umiad on the Arctic slope, and there was a very comprehensive study done of the possibilities of gas transmission lines to the interior. So a lot of seismic work was done at Gubik, and there's tons of records on it, just as there is Umiad.
Here we are in 2026, and we've been trying to get a gas line since 1954.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Basically. Well, and another little thing he did was get gas to Point Barrow. Well, Point was where the Naval Research Lab was. Barrow was the village, was the town. He was associated in 1963 with Alaska Architectural and Engineering Company in Fairbanks. And he was hired to design and supervise construction of a natural gas distribution system, which was installed for Barrow Utilities in Barrow. This was funded by the BIA, and this system, with numerous modifications over the years, has been in continuous service since 1963. He also helped plan and build the airport in Barrow.
Libby, did your dad go back to school to... No. So all that he learned about pipeline, he was just able to kind of be self-taught and intelligent enough to pick it up.
Yep. Well,
that's an engineer.
Yep.
Yep. He
and a good one.
After 58, he participated in numerous projects for oil and mineral exploration companies. His specialty was Arctic logistics and cold weather engineering.
You know, he didn't go where no one had ever gone before. He got everyone there where no one had ever gone before.
Exactly.
Good point. Very well said. He did considerable work as a consulting engineer for Phillips Petroleum. Colorado Oil and Gas was a big one. He became lifelong friends with a gentleman named Ralph Coleman, and he lived in Arvada, Colorado, and we became longtime family friends, still talk to them. There was Sinclair Oil and Gas and several geophysical service companies. They all operated in a grid pattern across the North Slope for many years prior to the discovery, the ARCO discovery in 1968. So, let's see.
We used to fly over the slope quite a bit with a job I had back in the mid-80s. And some of those grid lines were still quite visible out on the tundra.
Interesting.
No. So I don't know if any of them are there still, but 30, 40 years later, they were all quite visible.
Yeah, I read where he assisted in a cleanup project from about 1975 through 1977 on places to the west of the pipeline. Route. I tell you, his knowledge of the roadless North Slope and the Arctic seasonal access, the area's resources and daunting challenges, assisted statehood leaders in the 1960s as they had to select state lands. And they selected state lands that were proven to be valuable, have valuable petroleum resources because of my dad. Yep.
I wonder if when the legislators are down in Juneau, if they realize that they have a revenue stream because of your parents.
No. Doubtful.
Hmm.
The interior ones,
well,
maybe.
Guess what? They will now.
Yeah.
Public memory is sadly short.
Yeah. Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. You're listening to KFAR Radio. We're at 907-458-TALK, 907-458-8255. I have Nick Nugent because today is the second Wednesday of the month, and he has a guest in here, Libby Dalton-Slane, who's always put up with me, whether she wanted to or not. I am so fortunate. We will be back.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
It's that time of year. Time for a good spring cleaning. No, we're not talking about your house. We're talking about your mouth. Get over to Affordable Dental Care off 14th Avenue. Schedule a good cleaning this spring for your mouth. They work with your insurance, offer full dental services for the entire family, and they back it up with those affordable prices. So before you start dusting ceiling fans and cleaning rugs, call Affordable Dental Care and start your spring cleaning today. In your mouth. That's Affordable Dental Care off 14th Avenue. Online at adcak.com.
Wine glasses never fall over until you get a brand new rug.
Oh no!
Ketchup bottles act normal till you're wearing a new shirt.
Ugh, you kidding me?
And rocks lie peacefully on the road till the day you get a brand new windshield. Then they fly up off the road and attack without mercy. That's why new windshields from Glass Doctor come with our windshield protection plan. Unlimited repairs and one replacement for 12 months. Don't just fix it, protect it. Glass Doctor. A neighborly company.
Ice fishing is great winter fun, if you're prepared. Now, before you make your fishing hole in the ice, make Frontier Outfitters your first stop for everything you need to limit out. Rods to tackle, to ice tents, and ice augers. And Frontier Outfitters has the right winter clothing to keep you toasty warm and dry. Not to mention your license, guns, ammo, and a wide variety of snowshoes. Your next outdoor adventure is waiting for you. It begins at Frontier Outfitters for your Alaskan lifestyle.
KFAR weather.
Overcast skies today with a slight chance for snow changing to rain showers. Highs level off around 41. Winds out of the south around 5 miles an hour. Overcast tonight. Slight chance for rain showers mixing with then changing to snow. Lows dip down to about 22. That's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Derek Height.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I have Nick Nugent and Libby Dalton-Slane in the studio here with me.
And real quick, I got to tell this story before I forget. Because my dad was out of town so much in the winter, that's when all his work was done. He always made it home for Christmas, always. And he smoked Salem cigarettes. And to this day, I can still smell the Salem cigarette smoke in the house. And to me, that was a great smell. It meant Dad was home.
There you go.
Yep. He did some other projects locally, too, in between his consulting positions with engineering firms and oil and gas companies. He worked for Burgess Construction. And he was superintendent on the expansion of the Richardson Highway when they made it a four-lane from Fairbanks to North Pole.
Okay.
And I can remember driving. He let me ride in his truck with him sometimes. So it's really true. Superintendents just do drive around in their trucks a lot.
You know, it was interesting. I'm going to tell a story, and hopefully North Pole forgives me. But that's just the way it is. My dad would go out to Healy Lake, and back when all – four of us, my dad, my three brothers, and I, all four of us could get in the front of his El Camino. And you're back then, as the old Richardson Highway, you know, and you start out and it's winding and winding and winding. And we get out to North Pole, and Dad would say, "Okay, lock the doors and keep your eyes peeled because they're crazy out here." Sorry, North Pole, but that was my dad.
Another job Burgess had was down in Skagway. Blasting through a mountain to start that road to connect Skagway to the Canadian road system. And that was, I must have been 11, 10 or 11, so 67, 68. No, it was before 68. Mid-60s. The Burgess workers, some of them took their families down there, and Buck Allen from Nenana had his whole family, and he had a brood of kids. And my dad took me for 6 weeks, and I got to stay in the Thunderbird Motel, downtown Skagway, when it was dirt roads, no tourism to speak of. And our goal was to catch a wild horse, because there were still wild horses out there in that Skagway Dyea area.
Mm-hmm.
And our parents told us, if you catch one, you can keep it. So
you're after the horse.
Yep. So I'll never forget that.
That was a wonderful way for them to keep you guys busy.
Oh, we were busy, too. Yeah. Morning till night.
You know, most people don't realize what Burgess Construction did in the interior.
Nope.
That was a heck. That was.
Yep.
Yeah. Ready for a phone call? Libby?
Sure.
Good morning. You're on KFAR Radio with Libby Dalton-Slane and Nick Nugent. And your name is?
I'm Jim.
Hello, Jim.
Hey, I really appreciate your program today. You know, I live about 4 miles from my daughter, and she's off of Dalton Trail. And I always wondered about Dalton Trail. That must be associated with Dalton Highway. And that's right about the area where Libby was talking about getting the property. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yep.
Okay.
And the road to get to his property, you had to go up what is now Chattanooga Drive. And at the top, the only person up there was the Hegdahl family. And we had to, well, they did. I didn't. They had to trek across the Hegdahl family and make their way up to the top of the hill. And there was a section line that my dad scoped out. That's going to be our road. That's going to be the main road to our house. But they went up there initially to start clearing land and figuring out where to put the house and start building the foundation. So
that's a little further than I've ever been on uh-huh. the Dalton Trail. I always turn off on Teton Court.
McGoffin Estates.
And that was put in with my son-in-law. He did the road work for that little part of the subdivision.
Yeah, they did a really nice job. I know someone that lives on Teton Court,
I'm not
going to name any names because he might not be a good neighbor.
He's okay. I'm not going to name any names either.
He's young and a little rowdy at times, but good family.
Okay.
But anyway, that's how that road started. It was a section line, and then my dad decided, "Yep, we're building the road there," and he got some neighbors to pitch in and built a road out of tailings.
Okay. And you mentioned Barrow, the natural gas collection or distribution for Barrow. I worked years ago on it's about 8 or 9 mile gas pipeline from the gas wells to provide gas to Barrow.
Yep.
And that was an interesting job.
Yep.
But
they've had natural gas for years and years and years. I'm glad they have it.
Thank you for the phone call. Greatly appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Bye.
So basically, I'm going to say the trail was named by your mom because she went and got the land. But there's a highway named after your dad.
Yep. That's why. I don't know if we have.
How did that happen?
Charlie Parr put it in legislation, and it passed the legislature in 1981 because he was a catalyst in opening up that whole eastern side of Alaska that was called a PLO, Public Land Order 82, tied up, no development allowed by the U.S. government. And it was my dad's his passion in later years was to get that opened for the state of Alaska so we could get on our feet as a state and help the country at the same time. And if I had time, I'd tell you the history on it. But
that's a future date.
Is
that
it a future
that
date?
We're going to book.
Yep, but it's an important one. It's why the name, it's why it was named after him, because
yeah.
of his efforts to unlock that Public Land Order number 82.
One of the first fighters to do it. And it's continued since.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. So, okay. Yeah, you know, and, you know, working for Burgess Construction, Lloyd, I'm sure Lloyd took very well advantage of your dad's education in engineering.
Mm-hmm.
Operations, road construction. Oh, yeah.
I guess he fell more under civil engineering than mm-hmm. mining, but mining was his
passion.
Yeah.
Then later on, Burgess Construction, that was bought by Neil Burke, and he renamed it Alaska International Construction because he had Alaska International Air. So he bought Burgess Construction about 1977-ish, right in there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you, National Petroleum Reserve on the western side had 23 million acres. that President Harding set aside in 1923 for oil reserves in case we had another world war. And the PLO 82 had 25 million acres tied up with no development allowed. And he felt strongly that developing what he knew was up there, lots of oil and gas reserves,
mm-hmm.
was in the best interest of Alaska
yeah.
and the U.S.
He got the people up there to discover it and know where it was at
yep.
in the beginning.
Yep. And that is short version of mm-hmm. why the road was named after him. And not a lot of people know that. Who would know that, you know?
So is there something that when you're out the remains of your day that you're doing that this brings you right back to the memories of your mom and your dad?
The property.
Yeah.
That house is so well built. He said you could drive a D8 cat right on the main floor. It is well built into bedrock, concrete.
A brick S house.
Yeah. We replaced the roof when we moved in there in 2019, and it had a shake roof.
Mm-hmm.
Shakes and...
Yeah, shake shingle.
Shake shingle. The nails were 6 inches long.
Wow.
Pounded on top of that roof. Replacing the roof was easy. It was getting the shakes off. But yeah, the house is so well built. It'll last a lifetime if it's well taken care of.
Well, yeah. You're in there now.
Yeah, we took good care of it.
I was going to say.
Yep.
You know, Libby, I think sometimes from listening to what you're telling us and your dad's vision, maybe on the first day of budget hearings for the legislature each year, we should get a recording of you sitting down and letting them know how very few people were instrumental mm-hmm. in the money that they have to spend now.
True.
So don't blow it.
Right.
Yes. That would.
We got about 2 minutes left. Nick, how do you want to end?
I'd like to thank Libby for being here and bringing such a great subject with her. Look forward to seeing you again.
She is the expert on the subject matter.
Well, absolutely. You. And I know your brother George loaned me the book about your grandfather, and that was a pretty interesting read, too. We're kidding, you know, that just obviously this pathfinding was in their blood.
Obviously, yeah. Yep.
Libby, we have a minute left. How do you want to end it?
Just to let people know that Fairbanks in Alaska is a great state. We're experiencing hardships right now with this outward migration. And we're in the center of a lot of political maneuvering. But we're rich in natural resources, and they're ours, you know. And we should be able to develop them to the best of our ability. And not just oil and gas, but timber, fishing. And I hope the state with this LNG natural gas pipeline gets back on track, because thinking about my kids and my grandkids in the future. And I think the future's bright.
Yep.
It is.
Libby, Nick, I want to thank you both for being on the show. And is a day like this, which is exactly why I so love doing this show. Simple as that. I look at this, I look at KFAR Problem Corner as a crown jewel. And under my operation, I just enjoy it, protect it, and bring it to Fairbanks so people like you both can be on here and explaining who you are and what you do and how we do it. Fairbanks, you have a great day. I'll be back on Friday with Matt Halala, who's running for governor.